Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things, we don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also, our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a Women Over the Age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves as we are women. We are also caregivers. We are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today here on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a topic which we've been discussing a lot of times on this show this year. But really, it seems that we just want to keep talking about it so that other people can have other points of view. You could hear it a few more different times. We can also say, you know, I didn't hear that one before, and oh, maybe I'd love to try that out. And what we're talking about is about having a wholehearted life. That is the name of the book by Susan Reeve. And it's really important to be able to find out about that because, you know, we say, oh, having a wholehearted life, what do you mean? I'm missing out something? You know, is there something I didn't pay attention to, or really what's going on with that? And what we're really finding out is that, you know, if you were born in the 50s, 60s, 70s, really you were set up for a life that was pretty much this is what you were going to do, this is the path you would follow, this is the plateau that you would come up to and just stand there and look down and everything else. Well, we all know what happened to that in the after the year 2000. Everybody's ladders got kicked out from under them, and the earth started to shake, you know. A lot of people lost all of those plateaus they were on, and now it's time to rebuild. And what do you rebuild with? You rebuild with that which you were meant to be. And so many people don't even know what that means, so we're really here to say, let's just keep having the conversation, and let's see where it takes us on that path. So today we're going to be talking to Susan Reeve about her book, The Wholehearted Life. It's Big Changes, Greater Happiness, Week by Week. So if you're looking for something to help guide you through a year, this is a great book. It's not something you sit down and you read cover to cover, but it is something that you just pick a chapter, and that would be 4 or 5 pages, and you say, maybe I would really like to look at that. And if you opened up to that, that's a good starting place for you. You can start wherever you need to be. And there'll be a few little tips there for each day of the week, and then at the end of the week, you reflect back. As we've done on this show, you know, we have Inspirational Sunday with Alan Klein, and also we just want to have a laugh. We want to be able to reflect and say, you know, it did work, it didn't work, or, hey, how about the next one? Not everything is supposed to be for everybody, but it definitely is supposed to be that just something to look at and stir something in you. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
It's so great to be here with you, and I'm so excited to be sharing with your audience living a wholehearted life.
Well, thank you so much. Don't you think that it's just it's a new conversation, and I don't think we would have been having this in the 60s. How about you?
I think you're absolutely right. I think we were just at the very beginning point of learning to listen to our heart in the 60s.
Yeah, and our heart, Lord knows where it went in those times. But then if you look at the 80s and 90s, it kind of got squelched a little bit, and it's just starting to pop its head up again, right?
Absolutely. And you know, what you mentioned I think is really important is that in so many parts of the world when the economy tanked in 2008 and people fell off their safety net, the plateau. And it is often those times of hardship, those times of loss that really offer us a very deep opportunity to ask those questions. What do I really want? What is my heart song?
And that absolutely is true, because a lot of people are looking for that. But you know what, as we've known on this radio show as before, is that a lot of people are saying, you know what, I still don't know what that means. And they're still struggling to find that. And I think that's why on this show I've had a lot of authors and special guests where we've kind of talked about that in different ways, to be able to say, what is your life about? What is your heart pulling you to do? What is your real purpose in this life? And a lot of people are saying that they're looking for this grand thing. They're looking for an end result. And if they can't get there, they feel like they're lost. But even so, if you look at the other way, they say, oh, I already got there and it really didn't mean anything to me. And don't you think, have you heard that before? I've heard that quite often.
Absolutely. I've heard from so many of my clients, from so many people who attend my workshops, that, you know, I did all the right things. Mm-hmm. I got this degree. I got this job. I married. I raised children. And I wasn't feeling satisfied. Yeah, maybe I could wish for a bigger house or a fancier car or a bigger boat or a bigger bank balance. But ultimately, right, when we are looking outside of ourselves, and that's what so many of us have learned, that there's something outside of ourselves that we have to get to, when the truth is, to answer these questions of what is my purpose, what am I passionate about, it begins as an inside job.
Yeah, and sometimes when they look inside themselves, there's so much garbage in there, as we've had over decades. A lot of people have to clear that out first, and I really think that's a vital point, too, to be made, is that if you're looking inside and you're seeing things that may or may not be resonating with you, it's just time to take out the spring cleaning. It's not like you've lost all hope, and that's so vitally important for people to understand.
I think that is so crucial. And it's also important that when we set an intention, when we say a prayer, when we have a desire to live a more loving, fulfilling life, it is absolutely ordinary that everything that isn't that, kind of our personal demons, our personal I'm not enoughness, will surface to the light of our conscious awareness, and it's surfacing in order for us to upgrade the software.
Yeah, and don't you think that we're all struggling? I don't think you could look to your left or look to your right and think everybody's got the answers either.
I think absolutely. You know, I think ultimately, I mean, in some ways I have a simple idea. I don't mean it's necessarily easy to get there. It is like a roller coaster ride a good deal of the time. That we are ultimately here to be mighty expressions of love. And the way I express it and the way you express it and the way our listeners express it may look differently. Those are the qualities that are ultimately most fulfilling and satisfying. And I'm certainly someone who had to learn to love myself and to have the courage to express my love unconditionally.
And, but you know what, too? We look back at the 60s, you know, and the 70s, and it was all about that hippie love, I'm sure. I'm not sure how old you are, but I sure remember it. And
I remember it very well.
Yeah, and people say, you know, oh, well, is that the love you're talking about? We just walk around and we're meditating and life is woo-woo and all this other, when really we've come a long way as humans. We're much more intelligent. Now, we have to say it because the Internet has really made us all very much more aware, more in tune. We know a lot more things than we did in the 60s and 70s. You know, life has really ramped up very fast. So it's not really about, you know, we're going to have a little weed, we're going to do a little meditating, and life is good, and, you know, that's it. That's not what we're saying. I think it's more a... a futuristic type of idea. We've really come so far where we're taking those little concepts, but we're bringing them much further into the new world that we're in.
Absolutely. And I like that you use the word concepts, because I think early on that's what they were in many ways. They were concepts. And then how we embody those concepts. Who am I in my thoughts, in my words, in my actions? And it's not just in my head, it's really leading with my heart. And this also means that I have to be honest with myself about the full range of feelings that I experience. And it's crucial that I love myself through it all.
Oh, Susan, now, weren't you a perfectionist? Didn't you grow up with that little tag on your head? I had the one where you're perfect, you're going to do this, you have to do that. And, you know, and it was incredible, right?
Absolutely. And so much of my focus was, how do I fit in with my girlfriends, with models in magazines, with celebrities, and always falling short. And so practiced in seeing what wasn't right. So let's say if overall my weight was great, I had a boyfriend, I was doing well in school, but my curly hair was too frizzy, that's what would get my attention.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, none of us could keep up with Twiggy at that time, you know. I mean,
really,
that's the time I remember.
And I look back at those photos now and I think, whoa, there was so much to appreciate then, but I didn't know how to do that.
Yep. Absolutely. I'll tell you, I look back at old stuff and I say, oh my gosh, why was I so hard on myself, or why did I not pay attention to that? Because I looked fine. I knew what I was doing. Things were great. And yet we still have this little demon on our shoulder, you know, that still kept spewing out every time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we see it so clearly now in, I'll just use government as an example, independent of which side you're on, whether you're Republican or you're Democrat, that blaming, finding something wrong, it seems to me losing sight of the bigger vision and forgetting that we're really all on the same team. We're humans on planet Earth. And it's not about who's right and who's wrong. It's about how can we really support one another.
Yeah, and they don't, that is a very hard concept to be able to grasp for so many people. I think, in fact, I was speaking to someone just today. We were talking about the way we used to live and the way some people live in other areas of the country. I live here in the New Orleans area, and the way they live here is totally different than the way I lived 10 years ago in Sedona, you know, and even 30 or 40 years ago, how I lived in the Northeast. It just seems to be that people in different areas have different ways of living, but there are still core values in there that we all should be paying attention to. And I think that's what you talk a lot about in your book. And your book is The Wholehearted Life. So could you tell us a little bit about your book, how you decided to get started to write this? It would be great.
Sure. Well, I think what has influenced me throughout my life, I certainly didn't realize it at the time, was when I was a teen, 15 or 16 years old, I kept a journal. And one of the things I wrote in my journal was, what would the world be like if everybody loved themselves and everybody loved what they did? Now, I didn't realize when I was that age that, in a sense, those were my marching orders. Those were words for me to apply to myself, because I'm sure, you know, as I said, my curly hair bothered me, prettier girlfriends bothered me, you know, whatever. And so through the years, through the 40 years of my career, the underlying element of my work has been that a loving relationship with ourselves forms the blueprint for all of the relationships in our lives. And living a wholehearted life is really saying yes to it all, feasting on life. And so it is filled with ideas that I have personally used and I've used with thousands and thousands of clients, whether in corporate settings. I'm also an interfaith minister, so in the spiritual counseling that I do, as well as the work that I do with people 50 and older who are designing their third act. It is learning to love ourselves and to appreciate truly the very short time we have this gift of life.
Absolutely. And so many people have come crashing down and not able to get back up. And I think your book is a good way to maybe step out of that confusion.
Yeah, you know, as I wrote it, there are 52 chapters, and they go from pray and meditate to use the good dishes to exercise, write your obituary, spend time with a pet, eat dessert first, be the world's greatest lover. But I was really aware that we can have that feeling of being whole, of being connected, that sacred marriage of body, mind, spirit, whether we enter through a spiritual door, an emotional door, a physical door, a mental door. And so I wanted to open those doors for people. You know, for some people, going out for a run just fills their heart, gives them that feeling of being aligned. I was snowshoeing today in the woods in Western Massachusetts. And I just had this feeling of, you know, as the earth was blanketed with the snow, I just felt this silence that was so embracing and loving. So that's what did it for me today. Other times I meditate in the morning, but really discovering what is it that gives me that sense of connection with myself, with Source, with others, and with appreciation for ultimately everything that shows up in my life.
Well, you know, you have a chapter in here about use the good dishes, and it is so absolutely funny. I had read this chapter, and I had I think they're Wedgwood, I'm not sure. But anyway, and they're really, really good dishes. And I remember I got them from my first marriage in 79. And I only had like two place settings of it because it was so expensive. And I took it out one day and I said, you know, I have carried this around for at least the past 15 places that I've lived and I still haven't unboxed it. And I finally said, what am I waiting for? You know? And it just didn't make any sense. And so many people I've even spoken to, they said, but I'm going to give it to my kids. And I'm thinking, my kids could care less. You know, it's mine. I'm taking it out and using it.
Right. And, you know, another piece of that is it's also an expression that you deserve to use the good stuff.
Right.
It isn't just for everybody else, because many of us are good about being kind and thoughtful to those we love. We don't always include ourselves in the circle. And so whether it's a nightgown that you've had in the bottom drawer that you've been waiting to wear for the perfect night of romance, or if it's a candle you've been saving, or a special cream or soap, or those good dishes. I have moved a lot during the past 10 years in my exploring, and I have been taking the silver with me to eat with, because that represents, you know, I packed up the stainless. It's in the basement of my house in New York, and I wanted the good stuff with me.
Yeah. You know, it does make a huge difference when you're like, why am I always doing this when that's, you know, this stuff is just sitting here in a box. You know, so many times it's why are we saving it? Because all you need is one little hit and the box will be broken anyway. You know, and you could have had all that enjoyment out of it. So it's sort of like we're carrying around these little glass eggs in our lives. and we're really not touching them or noticing them or feeling them or sensing them or appreciating them, and we're all just cherishing this little glass egg in our world, when really we really should just start crack that open and start using it, whatever it is.
Absolutely. I feel that I had two losses early in my life. When I was 22 years old, my oldest sister died. And when I was 25 years old, my dad died within 6 weeks of being diagnosed with cancer. And it was a reminder to me, I mean, it was a wake-up call, mm-hmm. that in the snap of a finger, life can change.
Yes.
And that if I wait until I'm this certain weight, my hair is this certain length, I'm in this kind of relationship, my nails are all the same length that I like, whatever it is, all those conditions, then what I get good at is waiting,
yes.
rather than really feasting.
Yeah. And even appreciating. You know, we love to, some people love to window shop. You know, and they're so great at that, but yet they can't appreciate anything that they've already got. I've even seen people, they love, love, love to clothing shop and window shop. They could take all day to pick out just two items, and then when they bring it home, they throw it in the counter in a bag and leave it there, and it's sort of like they have total disrespect for it. And I'm going, but you just spent all of that intention and time on it. Was it just the process you wanted to do of acquiring, or was it about appreciating that which you purchased? And it was just such a sharp contrast, you know. And myself, you couldn't get me to go to a clothing store, but boy, take me to a grocery store, and I can't wait. You know, I'd go to every grocery store in the whole world, but not to a clothing store, because I just love to. You know, I've been without food, and I know what it means. And when I go, I like to appreciate it when I'm there. So there's a lot of different, I think, steps of the ladder people are on.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I find, I'm noticing what I'm wearing right now. And there's a reason why everything I have on is special to me. And if you saw me, I'm wearing these heavy woolen socks. They're not particularly beautiful, but I'll tell you, they were really warm today when I was snowshoeing. And to adorn ourselves, and I know there is a chapter in the book called Adorn Yourself, but to adorn ourselves with those items that have meaning to us, that become magic charms for us, that remind us of who we are, is so important. You know, to really be awake to our lives is what's important.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people do that too. They buy a lot of jewelry and stuff, and it kind of all sits in the jewelry box and they don't use it. I know myself, I probably haven't used it as much in the last 5 years. But before that, I used to wear it all the time. Like, I would go to even, you know, college classes, you know, with my Diamondique, you know, tennis bracelet on. But it was like, you know, I'm just going to enjoy it. And they're like, oh, well, that just doesn't look right. You always got all this garb on. And I'm going, I like to sparkle. You know, I like to shine. I like to, it's for me. It has nothing to do about you. So just, you know, you can just keep walking on. It's all about me. I like it, you know. And I think that's really important to also own it, you know, is it for you or is it for someone else, you know, or is it to just enjoy that one moment and say, you know what, yes, I do sparkle, and isn't it cool?
Yeah, I recently gave my granddaughter a really, really special necklace of mine. And her mother also had the same one. And I consciously, it was her 13th birthday, so that was a special birthday in my mind. And I wore the necklace for the month before I gave it to her to vibe it up.
Mm-hmm.
And
cool.
It was such a good feeling for me. I mean, I was happy to give it to her because it was a beautiful necklace.
Right.
I was happiest to be giving it to her because I thought about it a lot. I wanted it to be filled with my energy of the love that I have for her.
Right. And that's absolutely true, is about being able to touch and feel things and being important in life. You also have a chapter in here about smile. You know, I realize that, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, I have all of these wrinkles on the certain side of my face. And then other people would say, well, I don't have them on my cheeks. I've got the jowls to fall down. And, you know, you sometimes say, well, if the jowls are falling down, that means you don't smile enough. And, you know, the other ones on the top is because they smile a lot. So maybe we should smile more, you know. And if you ask people, they say, you know, have you smiled? They're like, what? And it's very foreign to them to even ask, have you, when was the last time you had a smile on? Or when is the last time you noticed someone else smiling?
Yeah, and when you look in the mirror, what face, what's the reflection that you see? Are you smiling back at yourself? Or do you have this frown and are looking? I remember years ago, looking in the mirror one morning, brushing my teeth, and I was thinking, I was just in the midst of a divorce. I was feeling terrible. I was feeling alone. Nobody was ever going to love me again. And I was looking in the mirror, and the words that I heard in my mind were, ugh, your hair is so awful. You look so ugly. Nobody's ever going to love you again. And I stopped with the toothbrush in my hand, and I thought, this is domestic violence. How many years have I made these comments to myself and have believed them? And so I then started, after I brush my teeth, and I'd say I do this like 99% of the time now, before I leave the bathroom, I smile at myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a practice. It is.
It's something that seems foreign, don't you think, to most people?
Absolutely. And we also have this idea that being professional, being smart, being intelligent, being competent is this face with no affect, very serious looking. When if we are competent, if we are brilliant, let that light shine through us. And a smile is one way that that's expressed.
Absolutely. You know, I had a period about, oh, I think it was about a month ago. And all I could keep hearing in my head was, ciao, Bella. And I'm going, oh, what the heck, you know? Why is this really bothering me? And why am I hearing it every time I turn around? And someone would say something to me, and I would just say, oh, ciao, Bella, ciao, Bella. I would answer that to everybody. It was sort of like a broken tape. So one day, my daughter knows Italian, and I said, Kristen, what does ciao bella mean? She says, it says hello, beautiful. And I went, oh, no wonder. Okay, got it. But it took, you know, 2 weeks of sharing it with others, hearing it in my own head, saying it all the time to say, oh, okay, I got that message.
Yeah, I just love the sound of those words.
Mm-hmm, I do, too. It's just something when you say ciao, and she said, oh, well, you're not saying goodbye, are you? And I said, no, it's ciao, Bella. And she said, oh, okay, it was cool. So I have that on my Twitter page now. And I just thought it was just, it was something that would, you know, when you say something to somebody, oh, you look nice, and they kind of just diss it in their head because of their own old tapes. But if you say ciao, Bella to them, they're like, what? In other words, it will rear their head to say, ooh, what did you say? So it may stir that other little inquisitive inspiration or something, you know?
Yeah, it seems to me you catch their attention. I mean, I like those words. I think I'm going to start experimenting with them. You catch their attention, and because you've caught their attention, they wake up.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I just love it. You'll have to follow me on Twitter on the Ciao Bella.
Okay, I will.
Yeah, well,
I'll
have to share it with everybody.
Okay, I'm just writing a note to myself right now.
Yeah, and you know, it's on the women over age 50 on Twitter. And the reason we do that, I think, is just to lighten up the load. You know, and I also noticed too, and you know, after 50, you know, I was all about stilettos before that. Because I lived in a very warm climate, we wore short skirts and tank tops, every single month of the year in Arizona, or in Florida, or in California when I lived there. And then, you know, when we I didn't feel well for like 2 or 3 years with hurricanes here in New Orleans, and then I noticed that I haven't worn stilettos in like 10 years. And I said, oh my gosh, you know what, but I absolutely love them. So I put them, you'll appreciate this. I put them on and I walked around for about, maybe an hour. And I said, now I remember, I don't want to wear these anymore. So I have this, but this is going to go on the women over the age of 50 on Twitter. And it's going to say, but we're going to put them on because you know what? Hey, when you're sitting down or you're putting your legs up in the air, they look absolutely fabulous. We don't have to walk in them. We can just put them on and look at them. So... But see, what we did is we just smiled and we just laughed and we just changed our energy, right?
You know, it's so interesting to me because I had this shoe conversation in a shoe store on Saturday. And I was with the woman working there. I was telling her that for close to 30 years living in Manhattan, I was walking on the streets and pavement, and my feet hurt all the time. And I don't do that to myself anymore. Yeah. And I was looking at beautiful, beautiful pair of red heels. And I turned to her and I said, these would be good in a room with carpeting when I'm sitting in a chair.
Absolutely. And I'm going to get myself, I had a hot pink pair, and I'm going to get those things, and we'll both have to post our pictures. Because you know what? You just put them on and you just enjoy it because it gives you pleasure. But that's part of your wholehearted life because you enjoy and you have those feelings that you feel. It just feels good. You know what I mean? And it's all about bringing those feelings back. Don't you think we lose that sometimes?
It totally is about that. It's the understanding that the thoughts that we think generate the feelings we experience. And simply because we've thought some thoughts over and over and over again for 10, 15, 20, 25, 50 years doesn't mean that we are doomed by that software. We upgrade our computers, our smartphones, and how about upgrading our mind. Yeah, it takes work. There's no question about it. It takes focus because it requires that we be awake, and it requires that we also have to say yes to those feelings that we took to be truth in the past that have that are versions of I'm not enough.
And you know what, when you say about the wholehearted life too, a lot of people in this age group, 50s, 60s, they find themselves in the midst of divorce. And I think sometimes they take it as it's not such a great thing. But sometimes you can take it as a great thing because really you can start your rewiring process instantly because you'll say, oh man, you know, you almost could see yourself shiver and say, I'm just shaking off all of that doesn't work for me anymore. And what would I like? How can I start going forward? And I'm going to create the best me that's enjoyable for me. And that's a great place to start.
And I think whether it's divorce, any kind of loss that wakes us up and essentially in some ways breaks our heart open. I mean, part of being wholehearted is being open-hearted. And being open-hearted means my heart is open to allow love from the outside to come in, as well as the light from within to shine out.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's talk about your book on chat. It says week 9. It says create a daily ritual. I think we find sometimes that we get so lost in the process of life, we forget what is a ritual. And sort of, in other words, we go through these paths and we say, I'm saying my prayers, and that you sit there and you don't even know if you actually did it or not. Or you sit there and you meditate and you're like, whatever, it just keeps me quiet and in one spot for a few minutes. Or exercising turns out to be more of a social event. So really with the daily ritual, I kind of think sometimes it has a purpose. What is the purpose? And the purpose, you need to define that for yourself, what the purpose would be. And once you do that, you say, now I want to keep on purpose. And on purpose would be the definition of a daily ritual.
Yes. Yeah. It's so, you know, we have become, it's interesting that we're called human beings, and yet most of us have functioned as human doings.
Mm-hmm.
And so having clarity about the purpose. I mean, when I sit down to meditate, my purpose is to connect with, listen to, whether I call this God source energy, my heart, but to connect from the inside out. And I often end my meditation with the question of, okay, what's my next step? How may I serve? And
right.
Then the challenge for me is not to then go into a negotiation with what comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I know it's my still small voice, it's my inner wisdom, it's God speaking to me, through me, is
mm-hmm.
those responses are short and clear. When I start having a whole story in my mind and justifying it and why I should be doing it this way, that's the voice of my ego. And this is not, I'm not making the ego bad. It's simply our ego functions much better when it is in service to our inner
mm-hmm.
knowing, to our still small voice within.
Yeah, so many times clients would come to me and they would ask me something about their health. And I would give them an answer and they would go, oh, but that's not what I was looking for. Oh, well, maybe you didn't understand what I was asking. Or, oh, you mean you can't fix what I'm telling you is wrong. And it's like, you just asked me a question and I'm listening to exactly what you're saying and I'm giving it back to you to make that decision. And then once you give it back to them, they're like, they're justifying and eradicating and trying to go through all kinds of different stories and everything because it just doesn't seem to be that which they were really looking for. Yet sometimes it is that simple.
Yeah, and I think I you know, it's so interesting to me. We've had so many similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with a friend recently who was having some back pain and was talking about going to a physician and getting some
mm-hmm.
medication for it. And I said, you know, you may also want to think about having a conversation with the pain in your back.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean you're not going to go to the doctor, but, you know, ask the pain what it has to tell you. And
right.
I got a whole story about, well, I have the pain because this happened, that happened. You know, I was sitting uncomfortably. It was cold. I bent down. I picked this up. And I said,
right.
you know, our bodies don't lie to us. We've got to
mm-hmm.
learn to listen to them. And unfortunately for many of us, and this was certainly a pattern that was true for me much earlier in my life, we don't listen until the call is very loud.
But you know what I think in their way of seeing it is that they haven't learned that language yet. So many times clients
yes.
would come to me and I would say something to them and they would say, I don't understand what you're saying. And I'm saying, I'm speaking another language and I'm helping you with the dialogue. You know, I do that on my other website because I'm a personal patient advocate. And what we do is this is the language the doctor is speaking. This is the language you're speaking. Now I'm going to give you the language that fits in the middle because so many times they don't understand what that is. And what that is a mesh of both two people in a room that aren't listening. They're just spewing, and they're hoping in the middle somewhere something's going to come out of it. That's what healthcare has been, and that's not where we should be with healthcare now. But it also is with life, like you speak in your book, you know, some of the things you say or you do and you move forward and you do hit that rebuttal point. It, granted, it sometimes it is for a lesson, but it also is for you to learn a different dialogue.
That's so important. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, and it's like we have to learn the language of love, the language of gratitude, the language of forgiveness. And as you say, to learn to have a conversation with our bodies, to appreciate this magnificent instrument that we have that gives us the opportunity to be here having this life. And, you know, I want to extend that to, I think it's also important, we've got to learn how to have a conversation with money.
Right. Yep.
Which is, you know, another form of exchange. Another, our energy, our relationship with money has to do with whether or not we feel abundant, because abundance isn't just about the amount of money you have in your bank account. There are people who are extremely wealthy financially, but are worried about losing it all the time.
Mm-hmm. And our fear, what about the conversation with fear? Everybody runs on it. I can't tell you, when I work with end-of-life clients, every single one is a journey of fear. What if, you know? And they can't even sit down and focus for 5 seconds, anybody, about it, you know, without this fear thing going on. It just seems to, I think over many decades, our lives, there's always been fear of this, that, or the other. And just, it's sort of like, what's going to hit you at the end of life, you know? How far down the racetrack till you get the checkered flag, you know? Which fear is going to knock it out first? And it seems to be we're running and running with that.
Yeah, and we're running and running with it, and oftentimes we allow the fear to run us.
Mm-hmm.
And because there are so many people who are doing that, there's this consensus about it, that it's okay to be stopped in our tracks regarding fear. I'm just taking a look in my other book, The Wholehearted, The Inspired Life. I have 4 acronyms for fear. One mm-hmm. is false evidence appearing real.
Right.
Another is, and I like this one, failure expected and received.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's finding excuses and reasons. And then the last one is forgetting everything is all right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, yeah, fear keeps us stuck, keeps us up at night, and has us not taking the risk, really, to live.
But also about power, too. A lot of people have they've given fear that power instead of believing they have power, or there's power, you know, other than that within God or within spirit or the energy of the universe. I even had someone the other day to me, they said, oh, I've had it with this positive crap that you keep dishing out. And I went, whoa, okay then.
Yeah,
well,
I had
we'll,
a
just,
friend of
we'll
mine.
Just take a little step yeah. back from that one.
Yeah, a friend of mine said to me many years ago, I don't always like to talk to you because you find a way to make everything sound like it's going to work out. You know, you're happy a good deal of the time, as though that was a bad thing. You know, that has been decades of practice.
Yes, but you know what? But even so, I could be sitting there crying about something and everything, and then they could say, well, what's wrong? I'll say, oh, I'm having this moment because I need to do this for right now, because I know in about an hour from now it's going to be okay.
Yes.
But we're still human. We still have to have those feelings. It's okay to have those feelings and emotions and touch into all that darkness and all that, you know, stuff on the other side. But the biggest point that you make in this book, and I've made so many times, is you've got to be able to flow. You have to flow from one side to the other, and then flow from one side to the other. We can't have happiness 100% of the time, you know, dip into that little well of negativity and poo-poo for a little while, and then you'll appreciate that happiness and you can go back over there, you know, or whatever. But do enjoy it, because it's got to ebb and flow. And if, you know, you don't want to be super stuck in the cement, because then when something takes you to your knees, you're like, I don't recognize this. Well, practice, ebb and flow.
Yeah, and, you know, because I find so many people want to get rid of those, what we consider negative emotions,
right,
that constriction. And
yeah,
there's no getting rid of anything. There mm-hmm. is acknowledging, there is accepting. I keep being reminded that when we use a GPS, you must put in the current location. You cannot get from where you are to where you want to be unless you acknowledge where you are.
Yeah.
It's not enough just to jot, you know, put in your GPS where you want to go. And it's the same thing with our emotional life. You're absolutely right. There's going to be ebb and flow. There's going to be dark and light. There's going to be constriction and expansion. And I just had the experience earlier today of I could feel my heart just sunk. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what I'm feeling now. What am I believing? Oh, I was believing nothing's going to work out for me. I don't get things done. Nobody's going to love me. You know, same old story that I thought I was through with this already. There, in shining the light of my awareness on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these parts of us want is to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
Is to be seen. And then there's a new moment.
Yeah,
I find that it's a very exciting time when there is so much focus in this work on accepting what is, rather than kind of just this new age idea of, I'm going to be loving. You can only be loving when you're really feeling loving.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the most loving thing you can be is to acknowledge that I'm feeling angry right now.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Susan? It's so funny. The best way, sometimes you have to get over those things, you know? And I would say to that is, you know those 97-cent plastic balls that you can get, like, at those big box stores and stuff, you know? The little kickballs the kids play with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, next time when you're really having one of those days, you get one of those 97 cents balls. You get a Sharpie, and you sit down and you write all the things you're PO'd about, right? All the things you're stuck on, all this other stuff. And they don't harm your wall. You just stand in your living room and play soccer against your wall and keep talking about those and keep wording those all out and keep saying, I'm mad about this, I'm mad about that. And eventually you'll get to be, hey, this is really fun, you know? And then eventually you'll be like, what am I here for? What am I doing? And then you stop and you look at the ball and you go, oh, I guess I'm not mad at that anymore. That really was kind of silly. Or, oh, you know. So in other words, you will phase it out of it. So, you know, you have to think that there's easy ways in life to be able to just move through things. Why do we think we send kids outside to play? Because they're a real pain in the butt in the house. So when they get outside, they just let all that go. They're not worried about it. So it's easy for them, so we just have to practice, you know, adult ways to be able to phase through some of this stuff. And, you know, as you said in, you know, your week 37 in your book, do your best. We're not saying do the best, do perfection. We're saying do your best, whatever your best is. And one time, I think a shaman had told me just recently that you can only do the best that you can do. Are you listening, you know? And it's like, but it has to be the best. They said, you can only do the best that you can do. And that was so vitally important. And I just had to keep hammering that through for like about 2 weeks.
Yeah, what a great message that is. And when we, you know, I find what's also really helpful for me is acknowledging the steps I take along the way.
Right.
So when I have, and some of it was in writing The Wholehearted Life, writing the book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just getting a chapter done, finding a quote that I wanted to put in a chapter, and acknowledging myself. Yes, the whole book wasn't complete because I found one particular quote, but there's an energy in acknowledgement that is so crucial. And I found in 1982, I chose as an acknowledgement symbol for myself, brushing my teeth. An acknowledgement symbol is something that you're doing anyway. It's not something that you think you should do, but it's something that you're doing anyway. And it's in week 18 in the book. And so I can tell you, since 1982, yes, there have been times that I haven't brushed my teeth. Every night, brushing my teeth is much easier in the morning because my mouth tastes lousy. But every night I hear, brush your teeth. And there have been times when I got as far as putting the toothbrush under the water and holding it up to my two front teeth. That act, because I have associated that with accomplishment for so long, even if I'm at the most darkest times in my experience, mm-hmm. it sheds a bit of light. So I really encourage people, choose something you're already doing and acknowledge yeah. yourself for doing it. It's not about the magnitude. It's about experiencing yourself through the eyes of accomplishment. And that's E-Y-E-S as well as the letter I.
And, you know, that's real interesting you said that, because mine is a shower. I mean, I wash my hair and get a shower every single day. I mean, every single day of my life after I left my house when I was 18, I have done that. Mm-hmm. Because when I was in my house with my family members, you know, I was under 18, I wasn't able to do that every day. And I set myself my goal that I would do that every single day. And I have never missed a day, ever. Mm. And even, you know, I'll get up earlier than everybody else. Even when I was, you know, a single parent, four kids, had to go to school and work at the same time, and how many daycares and how many different schools, you know, all in one day.
Right.
I would get up at 4 o'clock to make sure I had my shower. And to me, that was like starting anew every day. You know, you wash away yesterday, we're starting today.
Yes.
And it's just something that I've done consistently. And I think it's just about looking at those small things, too, and appreciating them. There's a lot of people that don't have the money for a water bill. There's a lot of people that don't have showers. There's a lot of people, you know, that I see that are sleeping outside. So really appreciate what you do have, even if it is a small, simple step, because then you're on that path of appreciation and gratitude also.
Yeah, I have a program called 30 Days on Purpose, and today was day 19, and the focus of today is I am grateful. And what I wrote in the daily message that I send to the participants in the program is, how many of you wake up expressing your gratitude for a new day
mm-hmm.
of life?
Yeah.
And oftentimes we just, you know, hit the floor running in the
right.
morning. And that right. sets things in motion for the rest of our day.
You know, at the end of, at the outtake on my radio show, you'll hear it at the very end. I always say, before you pick up your glasses, before you pick up the remote or your cell phone, open your eyes, just stop and say, thank you, God, for today, period. You know, that you're still here today. Don't even pick up your glasses,
yeah.
and you'll hear it on the end of the show. But I say that every single time, and I really find that was so valid of an important thing for me. Well, Susan, I told you this hour we've just blown right through it.
Yeah.
So it was a quick hour, but if you could please share with the listeners about your book, your website, and how they could find out more information about you, that'd be wonderful.
Sure. My book is The Wholehearted Life, and you can find it on Amazon.com, The Wholehearted Life. And my website is SusanReeve.com. My name is spelled in an unusual way. It's SusanReeve, as in Victor, .com. And there's information about me, about my books, and I love to hear from you any questions you have about a wholehearted life.
Well, thank you, Susan, so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation. Yes, we must be on similar paths, huh?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and I am so energized by our conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette.
Well, Susan, have a great day, and thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to find out more information about Susan Reeve, and her book is The Wholehearted Life, Big Changes and Greater Happiness Week by Week, please do check out her website on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll be able to be guided directly to her website. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute great day being with you, and this is Dr. Jeanette. Really have a great evening. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone, or the television remote, or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.